Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, March 18th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. If you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process, and if you choose to listen to them even repeatedly, they can serve as a tutorial for you to help you get the maximum benefit from the use of these tools in the shortest time possible. We help people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so. You can do that by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll let me know you want to talk, and I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. Alternatively, you can send us an email. You can email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. Or you can email me at tjh at mindshifters-academy.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you, we'll address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for the feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody chooses to do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be a service, and that's just a whole heck of a lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. So please feel free to give us a call, 563-999-3581. and press 1 on your phone, even if it seems as though we're in the middle of something, reading or in a monologue or in a dialogue with somebody else. Feel free to put the hand up on your phone by pressing 1 on your keypad, and we will get to it as soon as we can, and we welcome those comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. It is a Monday. It has been it's been quite a busy weekend for me. I have, among other things, I've reviewed some of the work from Michael Singer. He did a podcast. I think the last podcast he did came out in December. And in it, he's giving the difference between moving into acceptance and actually letting something go. And these concepts are quite deep and profound, even though they sound almost silly in their simplicity at times. And I highly recommend his books and his online course, Living Untethered. Might actually be the title of his third book, but the idea is he wrote the book The Untethered Soul, and then he wrote the book The Surrender Experiment, and then he wrote the third book, which is probably Living Untethered. And now he has a couple different classes that are online through Sounds True and that online platform. And in addition to that, he also does his own podcast. So he's massaging these concepts, the Buddhist concepts and his training and teaching as a yogi and how it differs from what we would call psychotherapy or psychology. And the essence of it is that what he's proposing literally removes the need for psychology. If someone can do what he's recommending, and he's stating, you know, very clearly over and over again that everyone can do this, that there's no magic involved, that it's a part of, you know, just being human that allows us to do this, and that if a person steps in and just moves past acceptance into just observation, that there won't be any need for all of the tips and tricks and techniques that people keep asking for and that psychology might offer. And it really is, it's something more than just the opposite. It's like in a whole different realm of working with your life experience and your awareness of self and your thoughts. It's a whole different realm of doing that than anything related to psychology or psychiatry. So I recommend that. I recommend his books. I recommend his position. And I find a way to incorporate Michael Rice's tools, like the Reality Management Worksheet and or the targeted journaling that Michael calls the Mind Shifter. And I find a way to incorporate that because they seem to me to be very good ways to help the Western mind step closer into the realization of what's being suggested and what's being taught by the yogis and by the Buddhist teachings. So if you're at all interested, Michael Singer has this free podcast that you can tap into wherever you would get your podcasts, and you can access pretty much the same kind of stuff that he talks about in his books. If you don't want to purchase the books and you don't want to purchase the online class through like Sounds True, you can start to get access through it absolutely free through his new podcast, relatively new podcast. So that's what I wanted to share from the weekend. I'm wide open for comments, questions, suggested topics before moving back into the Way of Mastery and what it was offering us in the 14th lesson. I'm personally benefiting greatly from going very slowly through the Way of Mastery again this time. And I think I mentioned it last week that someone was questioning me, how many times have you read this book? And my honest answer is I lost count a long time ago, because I was never really counting as I would go through the individual lessons and just read them over and over and over again. I didn't have any set number of times I wanted to go through lesson one before moving on to lesson two. I just kind of did it by feel. And when it finally felt to me like maybe I should go on and find out what's being offered in lesson two, then I finally read lesson two. And I have no idea how many times I read lesson one before that happened. But I do know that soon after I read lesson two, I went back to read lesson one again. So, you know, I don't know. It isn't about the number of times that I repeat it. For me, it's about how well am I doing in my day-to-day life to be aware moment to moment, as the Way of Mastery recommends, even prior to every breath, about what I'm doing with my mind energy. How am I using my thoughts and the focus of my thoughts to experience something for myself and then to communicate to the people around me about where I'm going to put my mind energy, which is another way of saying what I find most valuable. What am I going to communicate is most important to me. I end up communicating that not by flowery speech, but literally by just how much of my mind energy, how much time in my day, how much of my mental, emotional energy I'm using to focus on one thing or another, because whatever I focus on, that's what I value most. And I know that it goes against what most of us have been trained to think of and speak of in the Western world, and yet my life has improved by leaps and bounds the more I've recognized, oh, you know what? That's a real viable way to look at something. What am I experiencing most? That's what I value. If in any given moment I have the ability to shift the focus of my attention and experience something differently, then whatever I'm experiencing must be what I value most in this moment. And, you know, quite literally, I was not aware of that for a lot of years. And as soon as I became aware of it, I was shocked. And then after the shock wore off, I decided to start playing with it. Let me do something differently in the way I'm using my mind energy. Let me watch and just be aware of and breathe into and release any thoughts about guilt or shame or blame, and watch how my life experience shifts. And that's like, you know, like the fundamental first step in creating a different life experience. For me, it was waking up and realizing I actually have a choice. And if I exercise that choice, I get different results than if I don't exercise it and I pretend I don't have any control over it. And then, you know, whether I realize it or not, in that next moment, I claim the label of victim. And I cling to thoughts that say, whatever is happening is what I don't want, and I don't have any control over it. So I am going very slowly through the way of mastery so that we get a chance to practice the different shifts in perception and the shifts in the use of our mind energy that are being recommended lesson by lesson. To my eye and ear, it's being suggested and we're being invited into that every single lesson in one way or another. So 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. And if nobody raises a hand, since there's nobody in the chat room yet and no questions from email recently, I'll go back to the Way of Mastery in lesson 14. We're reading, I'm backing up a little bit to say how, because there's this line that says, the way of transformation rests on something. And the way this book is written and laid out, whenever it says something that clearly, that concretely, I want to go back and play with it and massage it and think about it and try observing my life from the, whatever perspective is being offered until I really feel like I've got it. And when it says something like, the way of transformation rests on whatever comes next, I want to pay attention to. And I want to pay attention to it in such a way that I'm actually practicing trying to experience it actively in my life until it feels comfortable. So what does the way of mastery rest on? It rests on the complete reversal of the thought system you've learned in the world. The complete reversal of the topsy-turvy perception that conditions must be met outside of you before a choice for peace can be made instead of a war. That something must happen outside of you before you can choose forgiveness instead of judgment. That something has to happen outside of you before you can choose for love instead of fear. And this reversal of this thought process you've been taught by the world has to be so complete that you start to feel it, and it permeates the entire field of your body-mind energy system. So your entire consciousness is aware that a change has occurred. You're no longer viewing, interpreting, interacting with the world as it unfolds through the user interface of judgment, harsh perception, fear, guilt, shame. You're going to be interacting. You're going to use the user interface of the wide awake, wide open heart. In lesson 5, it said, the keys to the kingdom are learn to attune to the very subtle energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment. Hold the intention throughout the day of undoing the habit of being distracted. You've really cultivated the habit of being distracted. Hold the intention of undoing that habit of distraction. That's the second key to the kingdom. The third key to the kingdom is that you learn to stay in the state of allowance. You learn to watch for the early warning signs of tightness or tension, judgment, any kind of a negative perception, and you soften and breathe and let go of the resistance and the tightness and the tension, and you will automatically move back into allowance. And if you practice those first three steps enough, what's going to happen is that the experience of surrender will grow in you. It will get cultivated and grow. And in surrender, you'll move into the place where you know you aren't doing anything. Life is living through you. It's not you creating this or that. It's not you initiating this or that. It's not you giving permission for this or that. It's just life is living through you. And if you shift into that, the keys to the kingdom, and then you stay with it long enough that you start building this foundation that the way of transformation rests upon, this complete reversal of the thought system, not just in your intellectual thoughts, but in your whole consciousness, then what's going to happen is you're going to notice you'll be right in the middle of a set of circumstances that used to elicit judgment or fear or hurt or anger or sadness, and you'll recognize, quote, wow, my goodness, my whole body feels different. I just feel like being loving. I feel totally safe. What's the big deal here? Why did I used to get upset about this? Oh, I remember when these kinds of circumstances would have elicited sadness or hurt or fear or anger. And now I just think this is a beautiful place to be because right here in this moment, I can extend the love of Christ. Wow, what a joy. What a treasure. Thank the Creator that I have this moment in which I can be the blessing that blesses the world. Now this state that the Way of Mastery says we will find ourselves in if we keep cultivating the keys to the kingdom and laying the foundations for the way of transformation sounds, to my eye and ear, eerily like what Michael Singer talks about. As I just let go and I stay open rather than shut down. And what happens is what they call in that work the Shakti, the life force energy, starts to flow through me wide open, just like this work talks about becoming a conduit for the mind energy of the one mind. Or a conduit for the love of the Creator to express in the physical world. In the Michael Singer work, they talk about Shakti, the life energy, just flowing wide open through you, and your experience of life is the Shakti, is the energy. And when people are in the direct experience of that energy, they use words like bliss and ecstasy. And so you're creating your relationship with this flow of life, whether you want to call it Shakti, whether you want to call it the relationships between you and every other person around you, you're creating your experience of it. And one of the ways you create the experience of it is either by being tight and tense and shut down or wide open and allowing. And the Way of Mastery goes on and says, what is the world if not each moment of relationship in which you find yourself? You find yourself in a relationship with your thoughts. You find yourself in a relationship with the people around you. You find yourself in a relationship with the physical body. The text goes on and says, beloved friends, the use of time is pivotal. The use of time determines at all levels what you will experience in your tomorrows. long after the body ceases to be the teaching and learning device that you are most attached to, long after the body dies, you will indeed be continually stepping into your tomorrows because you are not your body. You are not your thoughts about yourself. You are consciousness itself. You are that which watches the thoughts and experiences the pain but is not the pain. You watch the depression, but you are not the depression. The text goes on and says, "For you are that sunbeam sent forth from the sun, from the mind of the Creator. And that capital L light never stops traveling," if you want to use a spatial term. So you, as the light of the one mind, as the consciousness, as the creative energy expressing, you will never cease to create. You will never cease to experience, even after you've dropped the physical body. The only choice you ever have is this. Quote, "Will I assume the responsibility for doing whatever I must do to eradicate every misperception, every obstacle to the presence of love, every limited belief I've ever learned about anyone or anything, especially about myself? Will I assume responsibility for eradicating those? When will I choose to assume responsibility for cultivating that perfect remembrance that I and my Creator are one, so that I can perceive the actual world, the capital R reality that shines through everything?" Close quotes. The text goes on and says, "That is the reality that is present in the very material that makes up the chair in which you're sitting. That reality literally pervades the body that you think is so dense and hard. Or perhaps if you've not been exercising, it's a little soft. The point is, there is nothing that you see that is not pervaded by the perfect radiance of the Creator's holy presence. Nothing. A stone, a leaf, a piece of paper blown by the wind, even the shouting of fear and anger from anyone, all of it contains within it, if you would receive it, the perfect love of creation. For your Father does not ever recoil or withdraw from the unlimited and perfect extension of himself. And creation is but love. If you did not abide wholly, totally, completely in that love in this moment, you would immediately cease to exist. I do not mean just die. I mean literally cease to exist. There would be no trace of thought or any memory of you in anybody's mind. It is only because love is that you are. That is why I once said, of myself I can do nothing, but my Father through me does these things. I did not say, quote, I learned these things of my Father, and now I will be the maker and the doer, close quotes. I acknowledged my complete helplessness, my complete dependency. I eradicated any perception that I was a self separate from the Creator. I stopped giving authority to the tiny little gnat shouting at the vastness of space, quote, my will be done, close quotes. As you sit in your chair in this moment, hopefully with your transformation journal in your lap, and the pen that you've purchased for only this purpose, remember this. You are completely, totally dependent at all times on the pervasive reality of capital L love. That is what has given you existence out of its deep desire to extend its treasure, joy. This is the reality of who you are in this moment. You are as the wave that has arisen from the ocean of creation's perfect and holy love. You could not for even a moment be cut off from it. Yes, tomorrow things will change. Yes, there will be a point when the body breaks down and dies. Yes, there will be a moment in which all that you see before you will be there no longer. For all things that arise in time end in time, that is the way it is. Yet, you are free to cultivate the ability to perceive the real world, capital R, real, actual world, to see, to know, to feel, to taste, to be, to extend that which is true, capital T true, and real, capital R real. Only love meets that definition. So you are free to cultivate the ability to perceive and extend love in every moment. And one way of talking about it is that's all this book is about, to wake us up to the true nature of life and our ability to recognize that that is who we are, that's what gave rise to us, and that's our gift to the world, is to extend that energy, unrestricted, wide open. The next section is titled, An Exercise to Develop Your Awareness. And the text reads, Therefore, again, by way of another exercise, take just a moment and look around you. What is the first thing your eyes see? Just be with it. Don't be so fast to judge it. Don't label it as a candle or a flower or a picture. Simply be with it. Let the body relax. Stop thinking so much. What is this thing? Do you truly know what it is and what it is for? You describe it. You name it as Adam once did the animals in the story of the Garden of Eden. And the human mind believes that once it has named or defined a thing, it therefore knows it. It is called the smugness of egoic knowledge. But do you truly know what that thing is? Do you recognize what has come about to even bring it into existence? Do you have any concept of how many minds had to have been involved in bringing forth that creation? What are the materials it is made of? Where did those materials come from? What plant, what rock, what metal has been discovered and extracted from the body of the earth to become that shape? How on earth did that happen? Where did the very molecules and atoms come from? What is that thing I'm looking at? Can you find a place in which you merely rest in awe and recognize your complete ignorance? You did not make that thing. You cannot find the moment in which that thing first began to arise as a thought in someone's mind. You are completely unaware of the movement and the moment of the birthing of the substance from which that object has been created. Look at it then with awe and recognize that it has come forth from the same place as you. Mystery. Utter, sheer mystery. When that happens, do you notice feeling an affinity with it? Are you not then in relationship with it? Can you not then begin to sense the sacredness in which that relationship abides? For mystery is sacred, and it transcends even the greatest of minds. The greatest of philosophers cannot comprehend the field of mystery in which all relationships arise. Now, look upon that object, whatever it is. Recognize that you have called it into relationship with yourself. Ponder for a moment and ask yourself, out of what vibration of consciousness did I first call this object to me? And you might remember purchasing it in a store. If so, see if you can discover the very first moment in your memory, in your consciousness, in which this object came into the field of your awareness. What was going on? What were you thinking? Or were you thinking at all? What motivated you to bring this into your field of awareness and into your home? If you're at a friend's house, the question remains the same. What motivated you to be where you are right now? What choices were you making with consciousness? Now, again, we would suggest that you pause in your reading and spend about 5 minutes repeating this exercise with several objects that you see in the room around you. Do not forget that that might even include your kneecap or your hand or a ring upon your finger or the socks upon your feet. Enjoy the exercise. Remember, do not press the brain. That is, do not think so hard. Relax the body. Sit in the chair as though you were a Christ and just look and go through the kinds of questions we've given to you. And then we will continue. Now, I don't have any idea how many people have read this book or listened to this book as we're reading it who actually stop and do that exercise. I can tell you it is a trip. It is something that has helped me open an awareness of how little we actually know and how it's opened an awareness for me of how much I pretend to know. And that let me see, oh my goodness, no wonder I get so upset when things don't go the way I think they should, because I'm sitting here thinking what shows up in my mind about how someone should act or how these things should unfold. I'm sitting here thinking that's valid. But that's not valid. Life has been unfolding for something billion years on this planet, 13.84 billion years since, as far as our scientists can tell, the universe of this universe that we're in was created. So life on this planet may be progressing for 4 billion years and life in the universe for 13.84 or more. And I'm going to sit here with the mind that frequently forgets to bring something to the office that I had planned to bring to the office. Happened again just this morning. Something I plan to bring to the office is sitting at home. And I'm going to use that same mind to complain about the way life is unfolding. It's silliness of the highest order. So I don't know how many people have engaged this or tried to, but I can tell you that it has really helped shape and motivate me to continue these exercises in different ways. The realization of how little I know and how silly it is for me to get upset when life goes in a way that isn't what my silly little 9-bit mind has decided it should. So the text goes on and asks, so how did it go if you stopped and did that exercise? Beloved friends, this exercise is very, very similar to one that I was also given by my Essene teachers when I was fairly young. I would spend hours, not just 5 minutes, but hours doing this exercise. I would do it in my father's house. I would do it in the synagogues. I would do it in the streets or the villages. My favorite time and place to do it was just at dusk, as the sun would begin to set, and as it did so, I observed the colors, and I felt the changes in the temperature of the air upon my skin. As I looked at the breezes dancing across the grasses, as I heard the song of the bird, and I would be with these things, just as I'm asking you to be with them and the objects in your room in this exercise, and hours would go by as I would sit and try to look at each and every star in the sky, asking myself the same questions. Can I discover the source of this thing that I'm seeing? Where did it come from? How could it be? What has brought this forth? As I began to sense that I was calling these things into my experience, I began to discern what brought me true joy. Not just a moment of pleasure or satisfaction or a sense of security, but that which elicited true joy. I discovered that what always brought joy was when I was willing to surrender into the awe of mystery, to penetrate the thoughts, perceptions, attitudes, and definitions that the world had taught me. Again, this sounds to my eye and ear to be exactly what Michael Singer is telling us happens when we learn to just release and relax everything so that the Shakti, the life energy, the life force flows through us unimpeded and we get access to it and our state changes to something that many people call bliss or joy. The text here goes on and says, to look at a plate and not just see a plate, but to see the mystery of life unfolding before me, to sit and look at a star, to sit and look at a sacred text, to sit and look at one who is diseased and somebody sitting at the side of the road covered with dust, and to see no difference between that and a star, to see them all pervaded by the same mystery, the same presence of the creation's love. I began to sense that that capital L love pervaded me, and that the very body-mind that I thought had been me, Yeshua ben Joseph, was arising out of mystery, out of mystery. Arising out of mystery that I did not create myself. And when that happened, I finally came to realize that even I was a mystery with which I was in a relationship. I decided to be in a relationship with my own self and what we refer to as the body mind. It's that peculiar sense of awareness in which I say, I am this or that. I decided to be in a relationship with the totality of my capital S self, mind, spirit, soul, emotion, body. And I decided to be in a relationship with that with the same sense of awe and mystery that I felt when I looked up at the farthest of stars into the night on a quiet hillside. Once I decided to do that, that changed everything. I gave up my self-definitions. I no longer saw myself as a carpenter's son. I did not see myself as a Jew. I no longer saw myself as a student of the Essenes. I came to see my capital S self as the mysterious extension of something beyond my comprehension. I saw my capital S self as a sunbeam to the sun. I saw my capital S self as the very mystery of God's presence being unfolded in the realm of manifestation. I saw that all that I thought, even down to the body, was temporary. And I saw that whatever it was that was birthing me was eternal. It was an unending, ongoing foreverness. And I found that if I could just rest in that, if I could just abide with that, if I could return to that awareness even prior to every breath, that I could tap into the very power of creation itself. And when once I did that, I would just get out of the way and get out of the way and get out of the way. And as I did that, I kept diving deeper into mystery upon mystery upon mystery. From that point on, I never let my mind rest. I never once decided I was done. I never defended a single perception that I held about anyone or anything. And by using time wisely, I cultivated over time the willingness and the ability to seek first the kingdom, even to the point where I was doing it prior to every word spoken, every gesture made with the body. Quote, Creator, I rest in you. What would you live through me in this moment? Let me witness it. Let me feel it. Let me taste it. Take me ever deeper into your mystery. I want all of you. And if I might make this confession, he says, I am still saying, quote, Creator, I want all of you. Life, love, creation itself, I want all of you. The way of transformation is the willingness to use time differently. There must come a point in the journey of each individual in which the head bows and the thought emerges, quote, I want only the love of creation. I no longer care what it takes or what is required. I submit to the mysterious force that is life, capital L life, and I'm asking only that I be transformed into the perfect field of awareness through which capital L love flows without obstruction. Close quotes. What you will discover in the end is that the only obstruction is fear and some expression of it. Each time you begin to set fear aside and choose to bless the world from the perfect holiness of your union with all of creation, each time you dare to be so arrogant in the eyes of the world as to be the presence of Christ. Each time you relax the mind and the body and recognize, quote, of myself, I do nothing. Something is living me, and it is to that which I surrender, close quotes. Each time you do that, you will cultivate a way of being in the world that is not of the world. That is, it is not within the perceptual mode that makes up the world. You will be different. You will look the same, but you will not be the you that the world has known. You will speak as you've always spoken. You will know your social security number. However, there will be a definite sense that you live and yet not you, but that one mind, that one flow of creation is living through you. Somehow, inextricably, unexplainably, you are being allowed to be the field of awareness that gets to witness capital L life living as you. And you will know that it is sacred. You will know that it is beautiful. You will know that right now, wherever you are in this moment, You are the embodiment and the expression of mystery. Capital L love forever extending itself. You are the very joy of creation itself. And you will continue to be so throughout all of existence. There will never be a time when you will not be. But by choosing to surrender defense of the perceptions you've come to identify as yourself, by choosing to release the grip on the fears you believe are justified and the judgments that you believe are true, you surrender all that. And you surrender your grip on the world that you have made, then creation will flow through you unimpeded, wide open. You will be a clear, wide open conduit. You can practice thinking and saying, of myself, I do nothing. I merely witness the flow of capital L love through me. I use time wisely to cultivate perfect remembrance of the actual world. Time and space do not imprison me. The body is not me. I use the body as a tool to fashion and shape that which in this world can extend love into any moment. Close quotes. As we come to the end of our second adventure into the way of transformation, notice what thoughts, what pictures, what items you've chosen to write into your journal. Notice the feelings that are occurring in the body, even now. Notice the thoughts, the pictures, and the images that you may hear echoing through the field of the mind. You abide nowhere but in the infinitude of creation's presence. Mastery comes when finally you choose to release all attachment to fear. And in perfect surrender, you release the dream of the dreamer itself, and you allow the mystery of capital L life to live through you without obstruction, without fear, in the perfect knowledge that I and my Father are one. There is nothing I have to do to get God or creation or love. There are only some things to be released so that love can move through me. Beloved friends, heed well what was shared at times in a very subtle way in this lesson. We would highly suggest that you read this lesson several times. Do it in different environments at different times, perhaps at 3 a.m, perhaps at midnight. And when your spring comes to warm the earth again, take time to find a small hill where you can gaze at the star. Perhaps abide with them differently. Review this lesson when you're feeling harried or stressed. Look at all of the different sets of circumstances that you've believed have the power to limit your choice or distract your energy. Read this lesson in those circumstances when you are sad, when you are lonely, when you are bothered. When the room is filled with too many friends, take this lesson and read it out on a park bench or on the benches of the great malls where many beings go to worship their god of, quote, stuff, close quotes, and exchange their golden coins for shopping. It's suggested that you shop instead for a new quality of awareness, a new way of being, that which penetrates what you believe you are seeing and reveals to you the perfect harmony of the kingdom, the presence of the love of creation. No one will ever make this journey for you. No one you see, no one with whom you live will ever make the journey to the heart of love for you. So get clear about your priorities and seek first the kingdom. Above all, remember that you are not alone. We are indeed with you always, You are love, and you are being held in love. Peace, then, be unto you always. Amen. So that is the second or third read-through. I've lost track of lesson 14. Again, the quick summary is we are being invited to use our time differently. We are being invited to question deeply with direct observation. Everything we think we know. Again, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Somebody just sent a text a while ago asking, where do we find the Michael Singer podcast? Wherever you get your podcast, just search for Michael Singer. It's available through Apple iTunes, it's available through Spotify and all that good stuff. I am grateful to everyone who's here and following along. I hope it's of use. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll turn on the microphone for and welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
To the new week.
Yes, welcome to the week and have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Monday, March the 18th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. I can hear you talking through the wall, but not through the microphone.
I hear you through the wall, but not through the window. Okay. Is that better, sweetie?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good. Welcome, everybody. Thank you, dear heart. Delighted we get to join once again in this pursuit of wholeness and well-being, living in and as the truth of what we were created to be. Confronting all the lies of the mind, all the habits of the mind that make up silly things to take the place of truth. Silly things like somebody else is to blame for what's moving inside of me. Somebody else is the creator of my life. And so it's all about a big wake-up call. And we're here to bring forward new and deeper levels of understanding of this first century Aramaic mindset that gives us just so much advancement that by the average mind it's inconceivable that it's even possible that it could be done. So delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. And Ms. Jeannie, do we have any questions in the chat room, anything happening in the phone queue, or do we have any questions via email or what have you?
No, and no. So it's all yours.
Quiet. Well, let's go back to the completing the Beatitudes from the Aramaic.
Oops, a hand just went up.
Well, then let's say hello to the hand.
I believe it's Ms. Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hi, friends.
Welcome, dear heart.
Hi. I've been thinking about the conversation you had with Celinda last, was it Friday?
Right.
On faking it till you make it versus hypocrisy.
Right.
And I had a thought.
Share it, please.
Well, faking it until you make it is like setting an intention. And if we have an intention, it means that we haven't done it yet. We're busy working on it. And I have the intention to be kind and so forth, to set my Rahman Kuba so that my filters are in order. And sometimes I even picture this helmet going on my head, porous helmet,
right.
Certain grids, certain things can go in and come out and certain ones can't. But I have often wondered about hypocrisy too, and I've decided that that's not hypocritical if you fake something, provided you're not faking it so that it's an ego trip for you. Well, I want to appear really loving here. I want people to think I'm this loving person, so I'm going to act a certain way, and the intent is good, but there's also kind of a folding back on the self to look good, and I've questioned myself about that. Well, I don't have much more to say, just that those, I think faking it till you make it is what we've got to do, because we haven't been doing certain wonderful things that we want to do, but it can get dicey.
Well, for me, on Friday.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, for me on Friday, I found it kind of humorous because I'd never heard of or thought of hypocrisy in any form of positive light whatsoever. And I'm looking at the mm-hmm. dictionary definition right now, at least one of them. The practice of professing beliefs, feelings, or virtues that one does not hold or possess. And to me, fake it till you make it says, well, to use an example, so I'm really angry, but I want to be a loving person, so I'm going to speak lovingly to this person. I'm going to fake it. It's not true. It's not actual. But I'm doing it as a way to lead my mind into going along with my new chosen path when my mind really isn't in agreement. So to me, it was the first time I've ever thought of hypocrisy in a positive light. And I mean, it does when I say to somebody, oh, you know, I cherish you, when I'm really feeling peeved at them, I'm perfectly in alignment with the definition of hypocrisy, professing beliefs, feelings, and virtues I do not hold, and doing it for a constructive reason. I want to shift and change my mind. So it had just never occurred to me as a positive use for the word hypocrisy, but I thought it was kind of a cool, for me, it was a cool new insight to think of it in that way.
Well, don't you think hypocrisy implies something not so good? I understand
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've never thought of hypocrisy in any positive light whatsoever ever in my life until we had that conversation the other day, and then I realized that, well, here's the definition, and if I'm faking it till I make it, positive reason, it is a constructive, positive use of hypocrisy, of
well,
doing something that really isn't genuine.
Yeah.
But doing it for a positive reason rather than being disingenuous.
Yeah. Well, but you're
That's
doing
kind of
it
how
with
I,
awareness.
Yes.
So if you do it with awareness, it's not hypocrisy anymore. I mean, we're nitpicking now. I agree with you. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I would not.
I think a lot of hypocrites know exactly what they're doing. I think a lot of hypocrites in the negative sense of the word know exactly what they're doing. It's done with awareness. I think it's, in fact, in many cases done purposely. You look at the political scene and you watch, when you hear the open mic, when somebody's not aware the microphone's on, and they are absolutely in the negative realm and playing hypocritically, and they know it. That'd be my take. But anyway, I found it was kind of humorous, and for me, it was putting a positive slant on something I'd never had a positive slant on before. And I've done that in the past. You know, I've used that idea of, geez, this isn't really how I'm feeling, but I'm going to do it because I want to move in that direction. I want to move my own mind. So.
Yeah, but you'd never call it hypocrisy then because you're fully aware. You're not two-faced. It's so different. You're talking about a really two-faced thing going on in the political scene. But I would never, sure you've had many times when you, but.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I bet when many times you've been kind and when you're probably feeling frustrated, but I wouldn't call that hypocrisy. It's faking it till you make it. And that's I think that's a wonderful thing. If you just keep aligned with your best intention, where I don't think the hypocrisy we see out in the political scene is necessarily that at all. But again,
I know it's not that. It's the exact opposite. It's the exact negative twist. I'm in agreement.
Yeah.
Just heading in the right direction, hopefully, all of us.
Yeah.
Mm. Any word from your nephew?
Oh, he's been sending me, he's blocked. He manages to send something in a way like on Facebook or something. I've blocked any messenger things from him.
Right.
It's very very interesting on Facebook. He's been sending three people at once, my daughter, her new husband, and me. And so I get them. But when I open up the messenger, anything he says, because he's saying it to all three of us, is not blocked to my son-in-law. So we all get it. But there are slots underneath where his text would have gone that say, this message has been blocked. But if you click on it, it'll unblock it right there, and you can read what they said. You know, it's a tricky little thing. I mean, Facebook's trying very hard to do what they can. So I get these, and sometimes if I'm curious and he's answering, since I'm not speaking to him, he's not answering me necessarily.
Right.
He may say something nasty about me. So I may click on one to see what was said to somebody else, but I tend not to open them at all now.
Yeah.
And he does send.
Sounds wise.
He does send TikTok things, little videos that have to do, I'm sure, with trying to correct his grandmother for her completely unenlightened, abusive behavior.
Right.
And I just delete them. So I'm not looking at anything. My daughter's in a tremendous dilemma, though, because she has bought an airline ticket to go to his graduation, thinking that she might not go. She wants
Bless
to keep the door open. But she knows that if he sees her there, he'll get a kind of satisfaction, but he'll mistreat her. If she doesn't go, he will play the victim and say, my parents didn't even come.
Right. Yeah.
They're that bad. And so she does her own kind of wake up. She's being a priest and one with real integrity. She says, my work as a priest is keeping me sane and well and centered. But I find my creativity has died back and my energy to do certain projects. I've got so much psychic energy going toward my son that I'm not speaking to him. She said it's just hard to be well. Yeah, so that's
Bless
where
her heart.
She's at. Yeah, I know. She
would love to breathe her.
Well,
she would
the terrible
probably
success
find
I had
great.
In breathing. Maybe she'd
Say
do
again?
Better than I did. Maybe she'd do better
well,
than I did if it's genetic. I had such a hard time with it.
I think she'd
have to find my way without it.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just think that she would unload a lot of energy if she were to step into it. If you happen to get face to face with her, I'd guide her through a session if I were you. I'd give her some, I think, tremendous relief in communicating with him. One of the things I quizzed him about was, you know, if he had any idea of what the word projection meant, because, I mean, he's sure that he knows all about everybody and everything. And it's, you know, he doesn't appear to have any idea that everything he's saying about you, about his mom, which is pretty, as you say, is pretty nasty, he has no idea. He's describing his own mind and the behaviors that you have. He's describing literally the behaviors he's doing right there in the text. But that's the challenge with the addicted mind.
Oh, my God, it's so hard. And I talked to Luke about him. Luke feels responsible because he introduced weed and alcohol to Jacob when they were teenagers. And he feels responsible. Mm. So we spent quite a lot of time talking him out of that and, you know, letting that go. Jacob is an adult. He has choices he could make. But it's painful for Luke. He's still sober and he's doing very well, but struggling about Jacob. So anyway, thanks for asking. You get the full load every time you ask.
Well, we'll continue to hold the space, and I hope he unblocks me and continues the conversation, but he's blocked me at this point, so.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of rage.
Oh, my God, yes. And fear, terror. He's going to be out on the street. You're making me homeless. And I'm thinking, well, that looks as if that's the way you're going. No choice of ours.
Holding the space for a wake-up.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for talking to me.
All right, dear heart. All right, blessings.
All right. You too.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, Miss Jeannie, we clear to go on with the Beatitudes?
I think so. Go for it.
Okay. Well, we've covered the first two that have not to do with being poor in spirit, but rather having a home in the active forces from the Creator, and one that does not have to do with mourning your wrongs and being comforted, but rather those who honor truth and profess one's own errors and the errors of one's society, being freed of mental stress. And then the third one, traditionally it's translated, historically it's translated as, blessed are the meek, they shall inherit the earth. And in Aramaic what it says is those who have humility, the word is mahik, M-A-K-I-K-H in Aramaic, which is humility, and humility has nothing to do with the Greek idea we've been fed of, you know, if you've got humility, you're crawling in the earth like a worm, but rather humility in Aramaic is defined as a mental quality of perceiving and cooperating. So this includes perception and behavior, perceiving and cooperating with the good desires of others. For they shall gain the earth, and the inherit, this kind of a thing. No, this is a very active thing that Yeshua was talking about. So cultivating literally the ability to perceive, to set one's mind so that one is able to perceive and cooperate with that which is in the upper end of the scale for people, the good desires of others. The next of the Beatitudes classically is interpreted as, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, they shall be fulfilled. In Aramaic, it says the Creator implant in your mind neural structures which will guide you when they are active. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent guidance system designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. You who have the mind structure underlying the attitude, judgment, and behavior described as just and fair behavior between people. You shall achieve it. The Yanksby attitude, again, historically interpreted as blessed are the merciful, they shall obtain mercy. In Aramaic, there's that whole preceding statement that talks about this. This is a way to activate a neural structure in you to guide, that your mind becomes a guide to take you to happiness and well-being. You who have Rachma have this filter active in the frontal lobes of your brain that encompasses both your judgment and your behavior, ends up in producing judgment and behavior that's based in love. And what it says is, by holding to that energy, you'll receive that in return. So rather than being merciful, it's got to do with a condition of mind, holding to a condition of mind. The next one, again, historically interpreted as, blessed are the pure in heart, they shall see the Creator, in Aramaic, preceded by the Creator planted in your mind these neural structures meant to guide you. They become active if they are unconscious, if they are inactive. And here's one of the other steps, one of the other things that produces that result in your mind. And that is, you who have a completely purified mind. What would a completely purified mind look like? It would look like a mind that is incapable of generating any form of hostility or fear. Unfortunately, I've never met anybody who lives in that realm. I know many people, including myself, who are working toward it on a daily basis, but one of the ways to activate the underlying neural structure, the guidance system for happiness and well-being, is that you purify your own mind. And what that beatitude says is, rather than they shall see the Creator, in Aramaic, it says those who have a completely purified mind will comprehend the invisible source of creation. So we'll come to a point where we begin to comprehend. The mind will move out of the way and comprehension will come for deeper and deeper levels of understanding of the Creator and relationship. And then, blessed are the peacemakers, is the historical interpretation of the last one we're going to talk about. They shall be called the children of God. You who, in Aramaic, you who through service work effectively to produce the peace and understanding under and in accord with the Creator's will, you will be called the offspring or the children of the Creator. So each of those steps are steps that will take us in the direction of living in the space of active present love. The next beatitude speaks of being scorned, that if you bring forward a space of conscious, active, present love, the tendency will be that those around you who have not that mindset will tend to find it easy to project onto that mindset. And my take would be that then gives the individual who would be scorned or attacked for that understanding or holding that space, it would lead to the next level of that person learning to forgive whatever is in them that would lead to attack, that would invite another to bring on some form of an attack. And the next one speaks about being harassed and scorned because of being connected to a teaching that takes people to the space of active present love. And basically, you know, the bottom line of these last couple of Beatitudes is a cautionary warning that just says, if you choose to step outside of the culture's norms, if you choose to refuse to play in the realm of hostility and fear, that there will be a tendency for people to project whatever it is they haven't dealt with on that clear space. It takes a tremendous amount of learning to stay centered in the presence of love when some of the crazy stuff shows up. We're on page, let's see, what are we at here? Page 41, line 12, rejoice and be happy, joyful at the increase in your reward in this community of love, that the increase in the presence of love in your own physiology, if there is such harassment, because it's been going on for a long time. It speaks of, you know, that this is what's happened to the prophets before you. It's been going on for a long time. And, you know, to me, I think we're at a point where there is enough true teaching out there, people truly doing the work, that we're getting close to a shift, getting close to a change in the upward direction. Then it goes on to say, you are the salt of the earth, but the salt becomes tasteless with what will one salt? For such is of no use but to be trodden underfoot by men. Now, salt in that world was a very valuable resource. It was used for a fertilizer in soil. It was used to sterilize antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal. And it was used to access flavor. And if the presence of active love, the flavor would be the metaphor here, goes out of the salt, the active component in the salt disappears, then what use is it but to be trodden underfoot? And so it will be with those who lose, you know, I think Paul's reference, where he talks about, if I have not love, then I'm like a tinkling cymbal. He's talking about this very principle. If the actual presence of love is lost, then one doesn't even have a human life. And that's when self-destruction occurs. And 14 goes on to say, yours is the light of the world of humans, that if we bring this state of active present love, this state of Rachma forward into the world, then it's time to put it out there and make it available to the world. You do not light a lamp and set it under a basket, but put it in a high place that sheds its light to everyone in the household. So in like manner, let your light. And one of the websites you might want to check out for Aramaic work is Noura, N-O-O-H-R-A, which means light.com. That's Dr. Rocco Arrow, and he's got a lot of links, a lot of material that is very useful in understanding the Aramaic. And 17 think not that I am come to release the ties of the law. You know, men have always wanted to get out from under the law. You hear people say, oh, we're not under the law anymore. We're under grace. Well, I want to see you step off a cliff and tell me that you're not under the law of gravity. And people in that time spoke of law in many cases as what were the habits, what were the customs of the people. And Yeshua did not speak in terms of the customs of the people. He, you'll see in the text here, he uses the word nomosa. Nomosa meaning the way this energy system called life operates or works, rather than the customs of the people, which can be way off base for the truth of the way it works. And he says very clearly that to those who are, you know, jumping up and down saying, well, we're not under the law anymore, I come not to release the ties, but to add, to deepen your understanding of them. And he assures them that this process, this nomosa, will continue through to the end of time. That is, it's not, nobody's getting out from under it, although lots of people dance around and jump up and down and say they're out. It's like, good luck. So that's a big one to breathe on, because many people want to be free from the law. So, number 19, therefore, whoever will break, and we have this mistaken, when we think in terms of the Greek translations, we tend to have this mistaken belief that a law can be broken. And my offering would be that it's absolutely impossible to break a law. You look at people in their sorrow, in their pain, their suffering, their diseases, and there's the result of, quote-unquote, falling out of harmony with the law. Laws can't be broken. That's a misnomer. That's a Greek misnomer. We get broken on avoidable collisions with the law, and that's what every disease is. And that's one of the reasons with this work, for at every minute you're vigilant in what you're doing with your own energy system. And in the primary level of energy, you know, go back again to the opening words in the book of John, where it doesn't say in the beginning was the Word and the Word became flesh, but says in the beginning was the mind energy and the mind energy became flesh. And this work requires that at every instant you are cognizant of what you are doing with your mind energy. And if your mind energy is going in a direction that's based in hostility or fear, you make sure that you do the work of correction to reverse that. Because when you fall out of harmony with the way human life works, when you lose contact with your human life, then you literally enter into the energetic dynamic of creating disease. And forgiveness is about finding the energetic patterns with which we've fallen out of harmony. Again, number 19 says, therefore, whoever will break, but in Aramaic, nashiri would be more of falling out of harmony with the commandments, the way that the energy system works. So he's saying that the one who falls out of harmony with the expression of how it works, however small, and teaches another to do that, will be called the least in the heavenly estate. In other words, we're going to lose our contact with our human lives, with ourselves, as the active presence of love. But he who lives in harmony with and teaches them shall be called great in the heavenly estate. Malkuta Dishmea. the kingdom of love, the community of love. And so we are looking to confront, in particular, any habitual patterns of mind energy based in any form of hostility or fear, and be willing to bring them to correction and whatever lies beneath them, to apply the process of forgiveness to move out of those states tied into hostility or fear. And we're about the halfway point through the hour, Jeannie. So I'm going to just check in and see if we've got anything happening in the chat room or anyone in the phone queue with a hand up. You with us, Jeannie? Hello, Jeannie.
Yeah. My phone switched to another screen, and I couldn't get back to unmute myself.
I know how that goes.
There are no other hands up. If somebody presses one, you're first in line.
So let's see if we've got anybody out there with a question. And I'm going to make a shift and go back into toward the back of the text into the glossary, the dictionary, first century dictionary, and cover, just kind of skim through it or move through it and look at the definitions of these Aramaic words. And I think it will be with those brain cells firing with that review or that in front of us, then covering the text material, I think will be more meaningful if we've got those thoughts. But before I do that, I'd like to just open the gate for anybody who's out there with a thought or a question for us. So all is quiet, sweetie?
Is all quiet.
All right. Cool. Then I'm going to go to, if you've got the text, I'm going to move to page 72, the Aramaic glossary, and start to look at some of the Aramaic words and their definitions. So abde, serve with effect. Remember we talked about in the Beatitudes, abde shlama, is to work with effectively on behalf of, produced by service, bear to serve. So that particular use of it in the Beatitudes speaks of the reward that comes if you work effectively to produce the peace and understanding under and in accord with the Creator's will, abde shlama. And that this becomes one of the core principles that once you have have contact with a higher level of understanding, I think it creates an obligation, number one, to live it, and number two, to extend it into the world. And the word goes on, abde, to, in Matthew 5:9, is serving, a variation on the theme in Matthew 7 is a servant, someone who's serving. To follow, to produce, so those who produce the peace and understanding under and accord with the Creator's will. And Abbe, Father, Abib, relates to Abde, but it was a particular group of Hebrews who really were devoted to social truth, who wanted to, and we'll be changing the next edition. We'll be getting rid of that word love of truth to honor truth, recognizing that love is a state of being, which we did not have the full clarity on when this was printed last. and that to use the word love to describe a state of affection towards something is error in the definition. To honor something, honor truth is more correct directive to give the mind to keep it on track. So this particular group of people were a group that their whole thing was about, it wasn't about mourning their wrongs, as the Greeks translated it there, those who mourn their wrongs. It's not as if you, you know, put on a long face and go around mourning, but rather that you honestly look for the places where your own perceptual mind is in error. How do you tell if your perceptual mind is in error? What's the measuring stick? Any time that your perception or my perception is based in any form of hostility or fear, we're in error. You know, hostility and fear doesn't signal that somebody else in the world screwed up, as those who live out of the one world universal religion of blame believe. But rather, hostility and fear is an indicator that comes from within oneself that whatever one is perceiving at the moment is off base. So this speaks of that group who were really devoted to social truth and faced their own errors, looked into their own errors, and were willing to look at the errors of their society and to deal with them. So the Abili was the name of that group. And it also ties into the service that they do, so it ties into that word Abde. And then in John 1:14, Agan is dwelt, where one lived, Agra, where the wages, the earnings, the reward. As in Matthew 6:1. AK is a suffix put before a word that speaks of its status in the language as singular possessive of the prefixed word. So it gives several examples of kuntinak, or which means it's a shirt, but it's yours. So it's indicative of your possession, your mantle, your neighbor. There's a really important aspect of it, that the word neighbor is carib. And when the Greeks translated the words as loving your neighbor, it wasn't, the requirement was not to love your neighbor, because loving is not a verb. It's not something we do. It's what we are. When we bring who we are to our neighbor, then all of our behavior is going to be in alignment with love. But in Aramaic, it was to have rachma for neighbor. And that when we did, then our mind would always be on track with humility and truth toward neighbor. So the whole structure of the language starts to make sense with the Beatitudes, with that idea of rachma for neighbor, for the Creator, and that's the way one maintained one's own life. And Malkutak is to live in that community of love, or that kingdom, that realm, as opposed to the realm of hostility and fear. Sibyanan, as in Matthew 6:10, is, you know, the will and the individual's will moving in a particular direction. And will is in Aramaic, is seen as a spiritual faculty with which one is able to manage their own minds. It's nothing to do with willpower, the ego mind, you know, the ego mind having a cheap copy of everything that's real in the spiritual dimension. Will is not willpower, I'm going to force something. It's to live in a state where I manage my own mind. I source from being the goals with which my mind is in service and the things that direct behavior in my life are managed by my will. And then Ashok, as in Matthew 7:3, is friend. Again, this is all possessive, showing that it's something that belongs to the individual. A-K-H, fellow man, brother, friend. In other words, and this ties in with the idea of neighbor in Aramaic being a mental word, that neighbor is not about the guy who lives down the block or the gal who lives down the block, as our culture would portray it, but in Aramaic, it's a mental word, and to think of someone is to make of them your neighbor. So it's a mental word. It's about someone being mentally near. Word is to recognize that your fellow man is your neighbor. Also referring to an other, to someone else, to another person, your fellow man, friends. If you looked at the different variations on the theme of this idea of someone who is connected with you simply by mental awareness, not necessarily physical proximity. And when you kind of grok the meaning of that whole idea, then you realize that the obligation of that law of having rachna is one that isn't about your neighbor at all. It's about the condition of your own mind with which you approach the world and anyone in it. And interestingly enough, including yourself, because in Aramaic, you are your own neighbor. And therefore, you're required to maintain this condition of love, this condition of rachma within your mind, or this filter keeps you in touch with the truth of yourself as the presence of love. And then when we get to Kuba, we'll take a look at that one. Akhil Karsa, as in Matthew 4:1-8, unrighteous, a force of unrighteousness. And when one's moving into some form of hostility or fear. And here's a word that was left in its original form, and because there's so much confusion and so many different misperceptions about the Creator, but Alaha, that which was before the beginning of creation, the highest, the most ultimate, the most infinite, most unknowable, the ultimate source of truth, of what is, of what will be, and of glory. It represents God throughout the New Testament, wherever it appears. The Muslim word of God, Allah, or Allah, is basically the same word. So in Aramaic, the word that would be represent the Creator would be Allah. And it would be the ultimate, ever-present source of love. Alma refers to the world of men. When we separate ourselves from being, we're now in this realm of Adam, Adamos, the red clay. So we see several variations on the theme of that, the world of men, the world which is to come. Aplach, the verb to divide, to have, to separate. And then there's several variations on that, being divided, being separated from. And to recognize that the unifying force from that which would divide us, it's perception that divides us. You know, go back to Einstein and his brilliant observation. If you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. When people live in that optical delusion, they think there's somebody that it's okay to point hostility or fear at. Well, of course, that person is so terrible, they deserve my hostility, right? Well, gee, you know, I observed what they were doing, and what they did was, you're right, it was pretty terrible. And, you know, I would agree with you, they deserve it. But then when you realize that you're not separate from that, if you send that hostility toward this particular neighbor, who gets the original and who gets the carbon copy? And that other person may not be home for delivery. And so the original stays right where it is. So ultimately, this idea of separation does not govern perception when Rachma is active in the mind. There will be an underlying awareness of the connectedness of all life. And that it is our eye that creates, as Einstein says, this optical delusion of separateness. Abala or Abali, as in Matthew 5:45, talks about wicked those who are out of alignment with truth. And then B, apostrophe before many different words, speaks of used as a prefix and refers to the departure from or with, by means of, through, and within. So in John 14:26, Yeshua talks, speaks of as through me, Bishmi, through me, Be'ruch, in Rukha. So one has their home, that beatitude that the Greeks totally, totally just shattered and destroyed by speaking of being poor in spirit. Here's the word home. Here's where we have our home in these eternal forces. And that those eternal forces are active with and accompany one's own mind. The apostrophe Dalguta, again, as in Matthew 5:11, deceitfully. So it's describing the motion of energies, conditions within the mind. Matthew 12:27, Beelzebub, the prince of evil, and again, evil being simply not a positive wrong, but rather out of alignment with truth. So evil relates to the word sin in Aramaic. Remember, the word sin is an archery term. When you fired at the target, if you missed the target, the scorekeeper yelled, sin, you're off the mark. Pardon me, if you missed the bullseye, but if you missed the target altogether, then it was evil. It was totally off the mark. And those who would personify leading people in ways of thinking that are off the mark would be represented by this particular concept. And then Barho, as in Matthew 5:44, to become a blessing, that when one lives in this condition of Rachma, when one has their home in the eternal forces from the Creator, then the only thing that can extend from that person to others would be this active presence of love. And when that active presence of love extends to others, there's a tendency for that same condition to be active in another's mind. If there are 1,000 blocks to that condition being active in another's mind, then those blocks are going to tend to move and open, and that creates the kinds of circumstances that were talked about in those last few Beatitudes, where one is put upon by the world and given the opportunity to clean up the next level of their own minds. Patala, malicious, vain. Baini, grass, dust, sawdust, splinter. Take the splinter out of your brother's eye while you have a beam in your own. Bay is to strengthen, to encourage, to uplift. When one has Rakma active in their minds, there is the resonant energy of upliftment to everyone who is in the space of that presence of love. And or, of course, it opens the healing process, where one gets to process through that which is holding one back from being in that uplifted state. So that Nitbayun, that beatitude of they shall be comforted. And then tying back with that idea of evil, Pilbalon, is injurious, adverse, hostile. Bisha is an archery term that connotes off the target, evil, the result of missing the mark. Again, it's not a positive evil. It's the absence of being on target. When love is not present, then there's an absence. You know, darkness is not a presence. Darkness is an absence of light. And that's why, you know, Yeshua talks so much about being the light of the world. Don't put your light under a bushel basket. In other words, don't hide behind hostilities and fears, but rather bring it forward. Otherwise, there'll be a tendency to be off the mark. And there's several different uses of the word in that those last few passages from Matthew. And then that word moves into the use of a noun, evil words, thoughts, acts, deeds. When one is locked into Matthew 6:34, the evils thereof, of that particular time period, thoughts that are not connected to love, words that are not connected to love. Nasha, all men, descendants of Adam, the first man. So we hear the Aramaic understanding of Adam is the red clay, is this body-mind unit, and then comes into this expression the actual created human, that created state of love that takes over this Adamos, this piece of red clay. And if we get stuck in the mind of man, as Yeshua addressed Peter when he's trying to inhibit Yeshua from carrying out the demonstration of death having no hold over him. You remember he addresses Peter directly as Satan, and he says, for you think in the mind of man, you think in the mind of Adam, Adamos, the red clay, rather than being attuned to your higher faculties of which you are capable of doing. And so there's several variations on the theme referring to this carbon-based memory system and being locked into the constructs of the mind of the red clay, the body-mind unit. Several references from the beginning, Breschet, at the very beginning, this beginning. The suffix C-E-A-N is adding that to a word. It means it's pure, clean, sound, free from fault. Again, tying into Ruka Dikucha. Ruka Dikucha is that elemental force which undoes those things that are off base and leaves that pure, clean state. And the reason why in the worksheet there's that invitation to Ruka to step in and remove those energetic patterns that leave one in a toxic state, leave one in a diseased state. And that takes us down to the last minute or so. And I appreciate everyone who joins us, and we'll look forward tomorrow to moving to the next level. And in the meantime, invite everybody to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.